The Tom Woods Show, episode 755.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I've just released another free ebook, this one called Education Without the State. Grab your copy at nostateeducation.com or by texting the word educate to 33444. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here. I'm actually on the Contra Cruise, the cruise I'm hosting with Bob Murphy this week. But yet, here you are listening to me because I prepared some episodes in advance before setting sail. And today in particular, I'm talking to Ivo Zlamal about the subject of Singapore. Once in a while, I get people asking me, where should I go if the you-know-what hits the fan in the United States? What's a good place where a libertarian might feel more or less at home? And sometimes I hear Singapore raised as a possibility, and Ivo offered to come on and talk a little bit about Singapore as somebody who has lived there for a number of years, about 4.5 years, but who wasn't born there, and so has a perspective of somebody taking a fresh look at the country, the very small country. Ivo holds an undergraduate and a master's degree in economics from the University of Economics in Prague. Ivo, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
I have some curiosity among some listeners about some countries in the world and what they'd be like to live in from the point of view of what you and I believe. And you happen to live in Singapore, and you're a supporting listener of the show. And one time you wrote to me and said, you know, I'm not the world's foremost expert on Singapore, but I'm somebody who's lived here for a while and I could come comment on it. And I thought, why not? You know, I don't think we do quite enough of that on the show. So let's start with your background. Before you moved to Singapore, where were you born? Where were you raised?
So I was born in a communist Czechoslovakia, which now is the Czech Republic. And that's where I was raised and went to school. I did spend some time in the U.S. during my studies. I lived in Chicago for a year, so it was my senior year of high school, and then I spent the summer in Boston, and then later on I did a semester abroad at University of Texas at Austin. But anyway, so then later on I graduated from university in Prague. I got a job with SAP, a world leader in enterprise software. And maybe, you know, 2 years into my tenure with SAP, I convinced my management to send me on an assignment to Asia. So it was planned as a 6 month kind of thing. So I spent the first 3 months in Bangalore, India, and then I came here. Again, it was supposed to be for 3 months, but you know, I fell in love with it. And at the end of the 3 months, I ended up getting a local contract, and I've been here ever since. So as you were saying, it's been about 4.5 years.
All right. So you are looking at things from the point of view of somebody who, let's say, might not be blinded by local patriotism or history and heritage and in your youth or anything like that. You are coming at this from as somebody who's fresh with no prejudices one way or the other. So in some ways, you might be the ideal observer of the situation. When people think about Singapore, I think sometimes the first thing they think about, frankly, based on which has to do with something that I heard about when we were growing up, was corporal punishment. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, well, I mean, that's true that they do employ corporal punishment, which means that for certain offenses, you can get caned, right? So, for example, for, you know, vandalism or, you know, things like that, which, you know, like on one side, you know, people regard it as, you know, something that's very barbaric. But then, you know, also from another point of view, I mean, what we do in, you know, our Western countries, which sometimes is, you know, locking up people in cages, a lot of times for nonviolent crimes, you know, it's not barbaric.
Yeah, and they get locked up in these cages with people who assault them
right
for years on end. So before we go rendering judgment on Singapore, we ought to at least consider that. In fact, there is a crime show, and now I can't remember the name of it, but that I used to watch with my kids, because my kids are interested in crimes and crime solving. But in the U.S., all those programs deal with really disturbing things like rape and murder. I'm not going to show my 8-year-old girl something like that. So there's a show on a Singapore television station that we can get through YouTube that talks about crime. And in Singapore, they're focused on somebody stole a bicycle or somebody stole this lady's purse, and then we go find him and catch him. And in there, at the end of each episode, they talk about what the punishment for that crime was. And it'll be, you know, this long in jail or this much of a fine and, you know, this number of strikes with the cane. And they just say that very matter-of-factly. And my girls were quite interested in this. Wait, what? What was that last part? So that so that actually does go on. Okay, is there anybody in the country who – is Singapore like – Western countries in that there are people, let's say, maybe on the left who say we have to get rid of this terrible practice?
Well, yes. I mean, it's definitely like, Western countries. I'm sure, there are people who want to get rid of it, but it's not, it's not even like a big topic. It's not like it, it happens like all the time or would be on the news all the time. I think, what I want to say though, what you mentioned, those petty crimes is that Singapore is very safe, which, is a big selling point. So what that means is that, you can just feel safe on the streets anywhere at, any given hour. And, again, I'm not saying that there is, zero crime, but again, I mean, it just feels very different from, hanging out, let's say downtown Chicago.
Now let's talk about the economy. And of course, what I would be interested in is the government's role in the economy. But first of all, what is Singapore's economy like? What are the main goods produced? What are the basic features of the economy?
Right. So the biggest share of GDP, I'm pretty sure, is manufacturing. Obviously it's a big port, an important stop on the shipping route. So that contributes, largely. Then banking, is big, and so is, the IT sector. I would say generally it's things, kind of like high tech, high, value added stuff.
Now I'm looking at an article that looks at the rankings. This is from several years ago. This is a 2013 of the figures I have. And it's looking at per capita income, gross national income per capita in 2013. And Singapore is ranked number 16 in the entire world. And, there are a couple of hundred countries just about. So how do you account for that?
Yes, I mean, it definitely is a wealthy country. When you look at the statistics, though, I think one thing you have to keep in mind is that you're comparing a city, really, to a country, right? So if you want to compare the GDP per capita of Singapore to the U.S., for example, it's probably not a fair comparison. What would be a better comparison would be to compare the GDP of Singapore to that of New York City or San Francisco or L.A., the standard of living is very high.
So the population is small.
Yes, it's about maybe 5.5 million people on an island of less than 300 square miles, about 3.5 times the size of Washington, D.C.
What is your status? Are you a resident alien? Are you a citizen of Singapore?
I have what is called an employment pass. Which is essentially a work visa, which allows you to live and work here. And I'm in the process of applying for a permanent residency. But speaking of which, this is also an interesting topic because Singapore is actually very open. It is one thing is that the immigration is getting tighter, but still, it's one of the few countries where literally you can hop on a plane tomorrow, you arrive in Singapore. You get kind of like a tourist visa for 3 months that allows you to stay here. I mean, you cannot work, but you can look for jobs, and then if you do find a job, then it's a routine procedure for the companies to apply for your work permit. And you know, I know a whole lot of people, you know, who came here just like this. But what is, I guess, easier and how I ended up here is that I transferred with the company that I work for. But even that, I mean, how the process, how did it work was that I put together some paperwork. I submitted it to the immigration office, and within something like 48 or 72 hours, I had the work permit in my email.
Oh, okay. Well, that's very interesting. What about taxes in Singapore? I rather suspect that's part of the story.
Yes. So the good thing is that they are very low. I remember when I first came, so my first year, I was here only for 6 months, and during those 6 months, I made something like $30,000, and then it's time for income tax. And one thing is that it's fully automated. Like I didn't have to file anything. It's just the employer will just report how much they paid me, and then I get my tax bill, and it says $132.50 out of that $30,000 income. So which if they wrote me a letter saying if I want to chip in, I would probably chip in more voluntarily. But the income tax is progressive. So I think on an $100,000 income, the tax will be something like 5 to 6%. So it's very low. And the good thing about it is that like I get to collect 100% of my paycheck every month. There are no deductions for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, state, local, federal, you name it. It's just I collect 100%. And then once a year, I pay the income tax.
Oh, so they don't have withholding.
They do not have withholding. And then what happens then is that once you get your tax assessment, you can choose to pay in installments, which then happens to be kind of like an interest-free loan, really, from the government. But I choose to pay it in full because once a year. And then I have a gyro set up. So all I see is that my savings account, takes a hit. It means that I paid my taxes, and for the rest of the year, I can just forget about that the state exists.
Quite interesting. Quite interesting. What about, now there's a lot more to say about the economy, so let's continue actually there. The corporate tax rate, last I checked, was 17%, which is, again, relatively low.
Mm-hmm.
What about government spending and the government tax take in general? How heavily is the state felt in commercial life?
Not so much. So I mean, when it comes to the taxes, I mean, we talked about the income tax, and then there is a sales tax of 7%, and I'm sure there's excise taxes on alcohol, tobacco, gas, but. It is a free economy. It ranks number two on the index of economic freedom. Like on your daily life, I mean, it's hard to. It kind of like feels like that you get to see what life is without too much presence of the government. I mean, every time I come back from visiting Europe, it feels like I fast forward a couple of decades into the future, hoping that this is what. Life is going to be like in other parts of the world as well.
I have in front of me some relevant statistics that I think are interesting. The burden of government spending is very small. This is Dan Mitchell talking, averaging less than 20% of economic output since 1990. The one-time government spending climbed significantly above 20% of GDP during the Asian financial crisis. The government then did a remarkable job of implementing the golden rule of spending restraint. Singapore's fiscal discipline between 1998 and 2003 was particularly impressive, as spending was cut by an average of 9% each year. And these were real cuts, not the make-believe cuts we have in the U.S.
Right.
And then he says, but the statistic that matters most is that the burden of government spending dropped to 12% of GDP by 2007, a reduction of nearly 16 percentage points. So then it says government spending in Singapore has since 2007 slowly climbed back to about 18% of economic output, but that's still quite good by modern standards. So that seems relevant to what we're talking about.
Yep, exactly. And then they also, for the longest time, they've had balanced budgets, I think since like the 80s or something like that. But then again, also, if you look up the statistics, I think they will tell you that like the debt to GDP ratio, I think, is very high. It could be something like 100%. And I think where it comes from is from what they call CPF, which is kind of like a version of Social Security. But it is it's kind of like mandatory saving when you as an employee contribute and so does your employer. And then this money is set aside into like three buckets that you can use for your home if you're not taking on a mortgage, for healthcare, and then for your pension, for your retirement. And then the government guarantees 4% interest. In other words, they'll take the money, they'll invest it, and then they'll give you 4% interest. But I don't know what the fund invested in 2008, but somehow I doubt that they generated a 4% profit.
Let me ask you about languages. There are four languages, one of which is English, that are officially recognized by the government in Singapore. I assume English is the only one of those four languages you speak. Am I right?
Well, yes, you're right, but I do not speak any of those other languages that are spoken here. The good thing is that everybody speaks English, right? So it's a big advantage that Singapore has over, let's say, Hong Kong. I mean, those two are very similar, but as an English-speaking person, you'll be struggling a little bit in Hong Kong, whereas everybody speaks English in Singapore. And then the other three official languages, they follow the three main ethnic groups that make up the local population. So that's Chinese, Malay, and Indian. And so again, they all speak English, and then the kids, they will learn the second language of their ethnicity. So the Chinese kids will learn Mandarin, Malay will learn Malay, Bahasa, and then Indian learn Tamil.
So, I mean, I ask that because I know there are people out there who are thinking about where they might want to live someday, and the language barrier is obviously the first barrier somebody thinks of. So to know that that's not such a problem in Singapore is quite interesting. Now, I personally, for what my opinion is worth, I personally just can't imagine myself ever living in any other country. I would just be homesick. I'm very much of a homebody. I gripe and complain about the state, but that doesn't mean I don't like the place. I really do feel completely attached to the U.S. I could never imagine uprooting myself. It would seem wrong. I don't belong anywhere else. I belong here. But not everybody feels the way I do, and I know that some people are interested in what would they do if things got particularly bad, or what would they do even now? And so they do look at Singapore. And you're saying that you're over there, you're originally from communist Czechoslovakia, and you feel like you fit in there? You don't feel like a fish out of water?
Right. I mean, so I think, Tom, I'm like the exact opposite of you. I mean, I kind of consider myself a world citizen. I feel like I could live anywhere. I mean, the first thing, I mean, yes, it's true. I was born in communist Czechoslovakia, but then again, it was in 84, the regime fell 6 years later. So I do not really remember much from that period of time. But then when I lived in Chicago for a year when I was 17, I was like, yeah, well, I could live in Chicago. And then 5 years later, when I was in Austin, I was like, Austin, I mean, what a great place. I could live in Austin. So, right now I'm in Singapore. I'm happy here. And again, I'm trying to get my permanent residence, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to spend the rest of my life here.
Well, it's very interesting. What have we not covered about Singapore that you think people should know about?
Okay, so I think we talked about, so from a libertarian perspective, Singapore scores really well on the economic freedom. Then we have to also mention the second or the other set of issues that are important to libertarians, and those are civil liberties. Some people, I mean, you may hear that they say that Singapore is an authoritarian, form of government. Some even would say dictatorship. I think largely that's based on the fact that the party that is currently in power, the PAP, People's Action Party, has been in power ever since Singapore gained its independence in 1965. But then again, I mean, I think it's one of the two parties. I think it's the Democrats in the city of Chicago. They've been in power even longer. So would you then jump to the conclusion that there is no democracy in in Chicago, it's just no people, you know, vote for the same party. But then, you know, you would then so you have to look at, you know, other things. I mean, so another one would be, you know, freedom of speech or freedom of press. And that's where, if you look at the rankings, that's where Singapore doesn't rank very high. You know, you would have to ask a journalist, you know, exactly what that means and what kind of control the government will exercise over the media. A related issue to the freedom of speech and, you know, of press is that there are laws, you know, against you know, defamation or libel. So it's not like you are not allowed to criticize the government, you know, especially if you're a public figure. But, you know, if you do, then you just kind of have to make sure that you get your facts straight, because, you know, if you don't, then you could be sued for defamation. And, you know, then obviously, you know, the question is, you know, how does that whole thing play into, you know, the competition of the political parties and things like that.
What about, is there a surveillance issue in Singapore?
I mean, there's plenty of security cameras. That's one thing that you do definitely notice. But if you talk about, you know, like NSA style surveillance, then, yeah, honestly, I do not know.
Okay. All right. I'd known something about cameras, but okay. Why don't we wrap up with any final thoughts you have, particularly perhaps on the civil liberty line, and then just an overall summary of what your experience has been.
Okay. I mean, so, you know, to the civil liberties, I think, you know, what is interesting is, you know, how it affects, you know, the Singapore society and the culture. So one thing that you definitely notice is that there is, you know, a little less of like underground or, you know, subcultures compared to, you know, I guess especially Europe. Like there's not, you know, a whole lot of, you know, punks, you know, walking the streets and anti-establishment, anti, you know, regime movements. It all seems to be, you know, the whole city is kind of, you know, more like business driven. And it feels like, you know, like politics is not even like an issue. People really, you know, do not talk about it, you know, that much. That, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, people like, it's not like, you know, on Facebook or when you talk to you know, to them, it's not like they would be hesitant to freely express their opinion. You know, that also goes back to maybe the surveillance topic that you mentioned. But it's kind of like, you know, if you enjoy politics, if you enjoy, you know, the whole thing, you know, the political parties and the debates and, you know, the promises that they make and, you know, the leaders and all that, if you want to be engaged, then you'll probably not be happy in Singapore. If you just kind of want to, like, you know, maybe like forget about all that and kind of live in an economically free country where you do not have to deal with the government failures, and you can just kind of forget that the whole thing exists, and just go about, you know, your happy life, then you would, you know, you'll probably like Singapore.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time today. This is a topic I knew only three facts about. So with the experience of somebody who's lived there for a number of years, you definitely have helped us out and given us the beginnings of a picture of this place, and people can make their decisions from there. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Check out tomwoods.com/755. There I'll have Ivo's Lamal's Twitter, so you can follow him and tell him what a great job he did. He's at Ivo's Lamal. That's IvoZlamal. He is actually a member of my supporting listeners group. We have built up quite a nice community over there. We have a private Facebook group, but also many, many, many goodies. Remember in the old days, you used to get an umbrella if you supported PBS. Well, I got like the equivalent of 8 million umbrellas, except more practical in terms of all the goodies you get if you support this show. So consider joining our little community over at supportinglisteners.com. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about Margaret Thatcher. What is the real truth about the tenure of Margaret Thatcher? Well, we're going to talk to a Brit about that subject tomorrow. See you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.